Morning.
Morning.
Hi. Okay, so this morning I'm going to talk about concentration or samadhi, if you'd rather have a more exotic word. So concentration or samadhi is the eighth step in the Eightfold Path. And it's really the step that we start with in Zen. So some Buddhists think that we do it backwards in Zen, that we should do speech, action, livelihood, and all the others first. And then when we're ready, later on when we're more mature, get into meditation. But that's not the way we do Zen. We start with meditation, meditative concentration. And our focus, of course, in Zen meditation is on the breath. On the breath. I'm going to pause and breathe while these two attractive women enter the room and are seated. You might want to do that too. Who knows? The breath. So in every moment that we're alive, we're breathing, right? Without being too intrusive, it's possible to tell about the depth. Excuse me, I have a cold. It's possible to tell about the depth of someone's meditation practice just by watching them breathe. And I don't mean when they're sitting in their meditation, I mean when you're hanging out with them. I mean when you're hanging out with them. I can remember being at, I remember noticing that for the first time years ago when I was visiting some friends in Colorado at Naropa Institute. And noticing, I had practiced meditation with both of these people in California years before, and noticing how one of them was just sitting there talking, he was breathing down here, and the other one was just doing the normal American breathing. Well, I better not say American, that sounds like I'm putting Americans on normal regular breathing, but he was breathing down here. It was regular for him. He had just been doing so much meditation with such concentration for years that his the focus of his breathing had changed, so that it was naturally in his abdomen, which will actually happen to you too, especially if you don't look for it and continue to practice with great concentration. So breath, what are we doing? We're exchanging oxygen and carbon dioxide, right? And then there are those other gases, nitrogen, other inert gases. We're exchanging them, and we're cleansing. But like a fish in water, we don't notice it lots of times. We don't notice it. I was present at the childbirth of both my kids. Pretty lucky guy. And my wife and I practiced for both of those. And, of course, those of you who have had kids have been involved with childbirth know what we practiced on, right? Breath, breathing. So with our first child, of course, this was years ago, it was Lama's breathing. It was a special, specific sort of structured breathing that Linda and I started practicing, I think, 3 months before the birth, and that we then did all the way into the birth. And then by the time my daughter came around, which were not that much later, the Lamas was in California and they were into that stuff. My daughter was born here in Minnesota and they didn't know anything about that. Sorry, Minnesotans. But they just said, well, breathe. You need to breathe. You guys should breathe ahead together. And I remember Linda said, well, there are no classes? We were in northern Minnesota. classes, they said? No, you just breathe. They said, just practice it. Practice it with your husband. Your husband will help you. And so it worked, right? I mean, Linda was in a lot of pain for both childbirths, but the breathing helped her a lot. So she was able to do both naturally. Now, sometimes you're not able to do both naturally anyway. But that's true in meditation, too. Sometimes you need lots of help, lots of prompts that aren't, quote, natural, unquote. So here's a Buddhist teacher who says, and he was with his father, and his father was had a heart attack, and he was having an operation, and then his father was on a respirator. I noticed more because of my father being on the respirator from his heart surgery 2 months ago when I was there. They put a tube in his throat, and they have this respirator which breathes to you when you can't breathe. It has this funny thing on it. It has a little dial on it which says sigh adjustment. And you have to sort of get it right for that person. It will make 8 regular even breaths, and then there will be this big breath that it takes for you. It does that because it's part of the normal respiratory system to take regular sighs, regular big breaths. When you can sigh, it's a kind of letting go. That's beautiful. So our breathing practice at Zen Center involves a lot of sighing, although we try to do it quietly. But it's healthy. It's releasing. It's releasing. And our breathing in our life needs to involve a lot of sighing, too. It's part of the natural rhythm of being, right? And we can use our breath as a mirror, too. Our breath shows us what our state of mind is, shows us what we're feeling. So in practice period, we're focusing on aversive feelings, anger and hatred in particular. Well, what does our breath do? What does our breath do when we're angry? What does our breath do when we're hatred? We're hating. What does it do when we're passionate? What does it do when we're calm? What does it do when we're in a traffic jam? We're late for a meeting at Zen Center. In rush hour traffic. Well, that's me, not you guys. Me. What does my breath do? So here is a wonderful opportunity, always, to use your breath as a mirror. As a mirror. That way you learn about openness, don't you? You learn about when you close down and when you open. You learn about it. And you notice the synchronicity between your heart being closed and your breath being shallow. And the synchronicity between your heart being open and your breath being deep. You notice that. Good. Practice. Practice. Good life. Not just good practice, good life. So when my friend mother committed suicide years ago, Linda said to me, my wife said to me, well, you know, you should call him. And I didn't say anything to her. but I didn't go call him that night. And then the next morning she said to me, did you call so-and-so? And I said, no. She said, well, that's odd. She said, I thought you were something like, you were very empathic with mental illness because of your own family. So then I went and did my sitting. And as I sat down on my cushion, I realized that I was really breathing up here. There was no deep breathing. And that my heart was closed. And you know, my heart was closed because of fear. That's why our heart's closed. With fear. I mean, I had enough mental illness. Not that, too, in addition to my brother and my sister. Not that, too. So, but then when I was able to really breathe, I was able to call him because my heart opened. But my wife hadn't come back to me twice. And, of course, she would have come back to me a third time, too. So I had to get my act together. But a lot of times we don't. A lot of times I say, just bug off. Get out of my life. But I'm not noticing what's going on there. What's going on is that I'm protecting something. That I'm closing down. My breath is closing down. My heart is closing down. My cells are closing down. And self-protection is fine, but it's in that situation, I'm denying the potential that I can show some love to my good friend, that's there, that's always there, instead of retreat out of cowardice. But we're cowardly because we're afraid. So if we can get in touch with our breathing, we can see how our breathing mirrors our heart, mirrors what we're experiencing. We can open up big time, big time. We have a lot of power we can marshal just by paying attention to our breathing. Pretty amazing, isn't it? It's so simple. Just by paying attention to our breathing, we can marshal incredible power. Incredible. So our breath, then, is both a mirror and a place we can learn the art of concentration, the art of samadhi. So I want to suggest six stages of deepening our concentration, which I must have read somewhere, but I don't know. I pulled these notes up from someplace. So, you may find it. I'm sure you'll find it someplace, somewhere. Because I wouldn't have made up six stages. I don't go around thinking about six stages. Right? So the first stage is what? Easing into it. Easing into a meditation practice. Easing into a commitment to getting your butt on a cushion. Easing into it. Well, maybe 5 minutes, 2 days a week. Maybe I can ease into doing that. Maybe 10 minutes, 3 days a week. Maybe easing into it. Not possible. If you force yourself into it before easing into it, you'll force yourself out of it pretty fast. Right? So you have to ease yourself into it. You have to breathe yourself into it. Right? It's the same thing. You breathe yourself into it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit here for 7 minutes, 4 days a week, or 70 minutes, 4 days a week. I'm going to ease myself into it, breathe myself into it. My first stage. Without that stage, this can't do this thing. But in a way, the first stage comes at any time in your life. So don't. I know the problem with doing the stages is that everybody gets discouraged because they think they're just on the. Or the first stage, but I'm only on the first stage, you guys. It's the same thing for all of us. All of us. The second stage is to collect our thinking, to focus our energy that's so dispersed, that's so worried, that's so jumping around. Focus so we can become steady and one-pointed, like a candle flame in a windless place, right? A candle flame in a windless place. And there is a windless place. There is a windless place. It's not far off. It's not far off at all. It's so close. Every tradition, all the meditative traditions in the world have this teaching. Whether it be Hasidic prayers or Namu Amida Butsu or Jesus prayers or mantras or just following your breathing in Zen. It's collecting the thinking. It's focusing the thinking so that it's not all dispersed and so that we're right here. We're right here. even shamanic stuff. If I even Lakota, even going on the hill. So I went on the hill when I was a young man to do a Lakota vision quest. Well, what did Elmer said? He said two things. He said, every time your mind wanders off, bring it back to the pipe. I had to have a pipe with me. I had to carry the whole time. And he said, and if your mind keeps wandering off, then pray to the Great Spirit to bring it back. That's all he said to me. Doesn't matter what the tradition is. We all say the same thing. We all sound the same thing, you guys. So you can be present in your life. So you can be present in your life. You can't understand what's real or true if you don't collect yourself in this very moment. Otherwise, you're just living fantasy for 65 years or 83 years. You know, when we were kids, boy kids, not girl kids, we used to put magnifying glasses on ants. None of the girls wanted to do that. My sisters always went, yick. But I was good at doing that. I burned up a lot of ants. Oh, there we go. Focus. So, and if you have trouble collecting, if you have trouble focusing, I always say, and I'm sure that Ben, who's doing the meditation instruction, says that upstairs, then use some other touch points besides your breath. Use some other touch points. It can be any physical touch point. It can be where the breath is coming into your nostrils. It can be what we call putting your hand in your mudra. This is the mudra, the Buddhist mudra. It can be watching your abdomen as it comes up and down. It can be just feeling of your butt on the cushion. Or you can add phrases. You can add phrases. You can add mantra phrases that are sacred or unsacred, unmantra phrases that you read Thich Nhat Hanh did or that Tim said or Suzuki said. Doesn't matter. Everybody wants to find the best one. It's all the same, you guys. But it's what resonates with you. It's what resonates with you. It's all different because it's what resonates with you. But it's all the same in terms of which is better. So after years of breath work, here's what Ryokan says. Ryokan says, my hut lies in the middle of the dense forest. Every year the ivy grows longer. No news of the affairs of men, only the occasional song of a woodcutter. The sun shines, I mend my robe. When the moon is out, I read poems. I have nothing to report, my friends. This is good. He has nothing to report. I have nothing to report, my friends. If you want to find the true meaning, stop chasing after so many things. Stop chasing after so many things. So that's our practice. That's our practice, to stop chasing after so many things. That's why the eighth step in the path is so important. That's why meditation is so important and the focusing aspect of it. And the third stage. The third stage is relaxing. Relaxing. Discovering that a result of your first you're easing in, and then you're focusing, there's some space, a little bit of space between your thoughts, a little bit of space in here, not as much as you want. No, you want lots more space. But you relax into that little bit of space, and you find that little bit of space is huge. It's huge. It's tiny, but it's huge. And other thoughts are whirling all around it, but in that tiny, tiny crack, you have some real relaxation. Of real relaxation. And you say to yourself, I could stop chasing. Maybe you say that. Or maybe you say, I want more. Well, then your space is gone, right? The space is gone. But it's possible for you to relate within your mind to something that's less than busy. There is something in your mind which is not a thing that is less than busy. It's less than busy. And it's consistently less than busy. And you discover that. You discover that. each of you by doing this practice. There's an elemental quality of silence, of openness. And it takes time, but at some point the breathing just begins to breathe itself. It just begins to breathe itself. And it may not last as long as you want, but that's okay. If you experience the breathing itself, it's pretty cool. So I've told this story before about being with my first teacher in California, and I had a Zen group in my hometown of Palo Alto, and which he helped me start, and I had a bunch of people come to the Zen group finally for several months. We only had 3 people, and then I put in a little article in my newspaper, and 10 people came. Oh, it was cool. And so we sat, and we were doing the meditation. At the end of the meditation, my teacher, Shinryu Suzuki, talked to them about their posture. I think he just talked about their posture. And then I said, well, please teach technique, teach some technique. And he said, no, I can't do that. I would do that. And I thought he'd misunderstood me, so I tried saying it a different way. And then he said, no, can't do that. I tried a third time. By then, I was kind of angry, although I was not showing it. But my breath must have been up here. Huh? Must have been up here, right? Come on. You know how your breath, when your breath gets really constrained, it affects your voice. When I first started having to give talks here at Zen Center, my voice, because I wasn't breathing, because my heart was closed, because I was scared. You guys would judge me. Right? You all judge me. See how un-Zen I am. Right? Whatever that means. What do you think that means, to be un-Zen? Ridiculous, isn't it? But there we go. Oh, yeah. So finally, after the third one, he said, the breath, just breathe itself, Tim. Breath, just breathe itself, Tim. That's all he said. I was still pissed at him. Because here, these people didn't know anything about meditation. They were Stanford students. And he's giving them some Zen truism. He should have given them step one and step two, but he didn't. So, and that's typical in Zen. He didn't give them step one and step two. But it's true. The breath just breathes itself. It just breathes itself. All we need to do is get out of the way and breathe itself. So we've eased into our meditation. We've focused. I'm just going through these stages, right? We've focused. We've relaxed and discovered some space. And then we can start to sense the natural order of our breathing rather than controlling it. The natural order of our breathing. First, quieting. Then focusing. Then the space, the natural order. Oh, there's a beginning and a middle and an end to our breath. You know, I bet that most people never saw the beginning of a breath in their lives. Most people never saw the end of a breath in their lives. And yet, it's what we're doing continually. That's kind of amazing, isn't it? Don't you guys think that's amazing? I do. You should think it's amazing. They don't. Why? Because they're tripping. They're continually OCDing, right? Obsessing, compulsing, or whatever it is, you know? Right? Continually. So the Buddha said in the Pali Canon, go and find yourself some comfortable tree root underneath some tree out there and cross your legs and sit down and close your eyes and see if you can discover the whole nature of the world from your breath. The whole nature of the world from your breath. It bears great fruit. Cultivate it regularly. Bring it to perfection. First, breathing in long. I know I breathe in long. Breathing in short. I know it's a short breath. Experiencing the breath in the whole body, calming the body with the breath, observing the breath as it arises and passes, calming the mind using the breath. So when we get in sync with the natural order of our breathing, we get in sync with the natural order of the world. The world has a natural order. It doesn't need us to try to control it quite as much as we do. It has a natural order. Our lives have a natural progression. The seasons have a progression. The day to night has a progression. We can, through breathing, sink into that natural progression that's always present. So that not only is every breath a birth and a death, every movement begins, continues, and dies. Every sensation, every thought, don't worry about it. Every thought has a beginning, middle, and end. Don't worry about it. It'll die. It'll die on its own. Another one will be reborn. Sure, everything gets born again, or born for the first time, depending on how you want to. Whether you want to do a reincarnation thing or not, right? Every sound, every sight, every taste. So when Chuang Tzu, the Taoist teacher's wife, died, Chuang Tzu lived at the time of Buddha. A couple weeks later, his friend came to visit him and saw that he was out by the stream playing a joyful and happy piece on his flute. He didn't play a shakuhachi, he just played a little old flute, a little old bamboo flute. That was before the days of shakuhachi, I imagine. That was like the 5th, I'm looking at Leo, the 5th century B.C., before the contemporary era. He was playing a little ditty on his flute, right? And his friend went to Chuang Tzu and he said, Chuang Tzu, what are you doing down here? Your wife died just 10 days ago. I'm sure you're grieving, deeply grieving for her, and you're not wearing black. In China, grieving is big. They have lots of ceremonial grieving. You're just, and besides the flute tune that you're playing is so happy and joyful. And Chuang Tzu said, yes, he said, when my wife died, at first I was sad. But then I looked around me at the world and I felt it. And I saw that her passing was just like the leaves falling from the tree. Her passing was just like fall turning into winter. Her passing was just like the passing away of everything. And so I am quite delightedly playing my flute. Quite delightedly playing my flute. That's the whole story. Believe it or not. Believe it or not. You don't have to believe it. I'm not sure if I believe it. I kind of believe it. So the fifth stage then, so the fourth stage, that, as I said, is getting in touch with the natural order of your breathing, and then you get in touch with the natural order of everything, the natural nature, really. Nature tells us how to be, shows us how to be. We're pretty out of touch with it often, but it's always showing us, always telling us. And then the fifth stage is sympathy with and amusement toward the poisons. The poisons. Well, in Buddhism, you know, as Bonnie told us last week, we have three primary poisons. We have greed, hatred, and ignorance. Or lust, anger and delusion, or this, that, and the other. And they drive us. They drive us. They keep our breathing shallow. They keep our heart closed. They keep us in a generally fearful, obsessive, compulsive state. Not that would be diagnosed by a psychologist, but would be diagnosed by any Zen teacher. Just by hanging out. Sorry. It's true. True. So sympathy with and amusement toward the poisons. The poisons come in. Your anger will come in when you're sitting. It will come in. It'll try to mess up with your breathing, and it will mess up your breathing. But as your practice gets fuller, as you get more committed, as it gets deeper, you can just let that stuff in with some sympathy and even some amusement. A lot of people don't like the breathing techniques we teach here and the Suzuki Roshi taught, which were actually, as you saw, no techniques. But at least we teach to pay attention to your breath. And he did that sometimes too. Now, why he did that with me that day, I don't know. I am still pissed at him for that. And it was 40 years ago or 45 years ago. Talk about OCD, right? where was I going here? Breathing. Oh yeah, breathing. Oh yeah, sympathy and amusement with the poisons. So we teach breathing, but we don't teach to deep breathing. We don't teach Kundalini breathing. Have any of you ever done Kundalini breathing? Raise your hands. Only one, two. Kundalini breathing. You really activate your system. You really get going with. We don't teach Rinzai breathing. You know what Rinzai breathing is? In your hara, in your deep stomach, you're breathing all the time. We just teach regular breathing. Don't do anything. We don't do anything. There's not a strand of macho component to Soto Zen breathing. Not a strand. Just be with your breathing. But the thing about macho breathing, and I don't mean to be put down Kundalini or Rinzai too much, but you know, why not put them down a little bit? That's the klesha. That's the poisons. The poisons like to put down. So I can be amused by the poisons coming in, right? That's amusing. Isn't this amusing? In those kinds of breathing, you're suppressing. You're getting high. You're suppressing the poisons, and it's cool to do that for a while. But in ours, we don't suppress them. We don't keep them out. They're here. We're here, and when we're ready, we welcome. When we're ready, but not until we've established a good seat for ourselves. We call this establishing a good seat, and have a regular practice, and are able to regulate that practice and concentrate some. Concentrate quite a bit. So when we're ready to do that, we come again and again. We bring our breathing back, but we also breathe with the anger. We don't keep the anger out. We breathe with it. And at first it's difficult, but if you work with it for a while, it becomes interesting. And then, as I said, it even becomes amusing, and you become sympathetic. I become sympathetic to all you guys, because I say, I'm no different than you. I've been meditating for 78 years, but I'm no different than you. There it comes again. My sympathy to my own poison helps me be with you. Helps me be with you. Instead of thinking I've made it. If you think you've made it, then you've got a big problem. Big problem. Then your breathing is gonna come up here when you've made it. Because you've got it all, right? You've got it all. So here's a young boy going to his master who has a monastery on a stream, and he says, "Please teach me." And the master says, "You're not really sincere." It must be a Zen master. "What do you mean I'm not sincere? I want to learn." The master says, "Go away." And the boy comes back again and again. Finally, this young boy comes and says, "I really want to learn." The master says, "No, you don't." And this must be from the golden age of Chinese Zen, when these teachers threw their students around. "No, you don't." And he grabs him and throws him in the water. And he holds his head down under the water. The boy is kicking and screaming. Finally, he lets him up when he's just about blue and out of breath. The boy asks, "Why did you do that?" The master says, "When you want to learn what I have to teach as much as you wanted that breath, then you come and I'll teach you." So the last stage, the sixth stage. We've just done the poison stage, which is really the fun stage. You guys have a lot to look forward to. When you've done the fun stage, then you're ready for the sixth stage, which is coming to rest. The mind just comes to rest in this body. In this body. Not in some perfect body. In this body that's hanging over and that couldn't get up this morning and that wants to go to bed as soon as it gets home. In this body, right? And when you come to rest in this body, when you come to rest in this breathing, then there's quiet joy that just emanates. And a lightness that just is a present. It's always present anyway. That's why we say enlightenment. But it's not a special experience. It's lightness. Lightness. With heaviness all around. Lightness. The rent check. Your girlfriend. Your difficulties with your spouse or your children, next year's travel plans, they're all gone. They come in, they go out. Because you're at ease. They come in, they go out. Because you're at ease. That's your natural state. Be at ease. Be at ease. That's what this is all about, you guys. Learn to be at ease. At ease. Fear is always about something that hasn't come. Worry is about always that something hasn't come. Desire is always about something that hasn't come. So being at ease is not that hard. It's not that hard. That's just about stuff that hasn't come, that ill-at-ease stuff. What about this? What about this? Not that hard. So this entire progression from the first stage through the sixth stage is using the mind as a microscope, looking closely with our concentration, our awareness, until it dissolves into a changing dance of sensations and perceptions and thoughts and feelings and desires by refining the quality of the breath, which doesn't mean trying to change the breath, just refining it by being with it. We can appreciate and enjoy. We just do. We appreciate and enjoy. So that's what Zen concentration is about, watching your dumb breath. It's dumb, it's stupid, it's boring, it doesn't help, you don't get anything out of it. Good. Good, good, good. All the better. All the better. Do you understand my point? So we're training our concentration. When we sit on the cushion, we're training our concentration, and we're listening as if we've turned the radio to one particular station, and it just stays there. Just stays there. And every time that the radio, we want to change the radio to another station, we come it back to this one, even though it's the most boring, stupid station. We come back to it, right? We discover that it's not boring at all. So this isn't the kind of education we got at school or we get in school. School is cool, but we don't get this education in school. It's the training of our own heart, our own mind, our own heart-mind. This is a wonderful setting to get that training in, because we support each other. We support each other in that kind of training. So I'm going to close with a quote from W.S. Merwin. First, forget what time it is for an hour. Do it regularly every day. Then forget what day of the week it is, and do this regularly in company for a week. Then forget what country you were in, and practice doing it in company for a week. And then do them together for a week with as few breaks as possible. Follow these by forgetting how to add or to subtract. It makes no difference. You can change them around after a week. Both will later help you to forget how to count. Forget how to count starting with your own age, starting with how to count backwards, starting with even numbers, with Roman numerals, starting with fractions, with the old calendar, going on to the alphabet, forgetting it all until everything is continuous and whole again. Everything is continuous and whole. It starts continuous and whole, and we forget it, but it's always continuous and whole from the very beginning. And that's what this practice is about. Coming back to that, realizing that, and fully participating in that wholeness. And wholeness is not perfection. Not perfection. It's whole. Right? Whole. So that's what I want to say for this morning. I'd be glad to entertain questions or comments from any of you. Sure, hi.
I have one. Your answer is probably going to be breathing. I don't know what's a good answer for this, because I'm sort of new to all this, and I'm trying to figure out, so we were talking about how, you can have these problems and they're going to be going on in your life.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what that looks like.
Yes, that's right. You have no idea what it looks like, and I have to say that getting an idea of what it looks like won't necessarily help you. You could only discover this through doing practice, for practicing some sort of sitting still. It doesn't have to be this formal kind of sitting still, but some sort of sitting still daily and being with your breathing. And then you can discover. You can discover what it looks like. What's it like for you when you're still with your breathing?
My mind.
That's an important realization. You're noticing that. So already you've made progress in noticing that. And when you notice that, can you accept that? It's the nature of the mind to wander. It's the nature of the mind to wander, any mind, and keep bringing your mind back. Keep bringing your mind back. And can you do that?
Sometimes.
Okay. Okay, sometimes you can do it, sometimes you can't. And sometimes when you can do it, it's possible for you to relax enough so that you could actually let the emotion in too. Let the emotion that's wanting to flip you out into other worlds in too. And just be there with it. Yeah, just let the, let's say, okay, let's say, what should we say? Let's say some anger comes in. Do you want to do anger or
sadness? Or loneliness.
Okay. All right, let's do loneliness. Okay, so here we are. We're sitting, and sitting can really evoke loneliness. Really evoke loneliness. Because you're all by yourself here. Nobody's helping you. You only have your breath. Especially Zen sitting evokes loneliness. That's why people want Kundalini sitting or some other kind of sitting. You know, it gets something. But so it evokes loneliness. And so you keep bringing yourself back. You keep bringing yourself back. And then you relax into it enough that you begin to welcome the loneliness in. You're no longer shutting the loneliness out with your concentration. You're beginning to feel it. You're beginning to feel it in your heart. You're beginning to even feel how you're getting sort of a little teary, but you're still breathing. You're still with that, and so you're not telling yourself 100 stories about that loneliness. That loneliness is becoming so close to you, so intimate, that your stories about it have really reduced, and you're really quite focused with the loneliness. And then the loneliness is not something awful. It's something very wonderful. It connects you to all of life, because we're all completely lonely by ourselves, making up stuff to try to not be lonely, right? It's a deal. It's a human situation. Can you get a sense about that?
Mm-hmm. I don't think there's so many ideas. Like the stories.
Yeah.
There's so many stories, but I don't think I've ever sat with it long enough.
Yeah. That's right. That's why this is a discipline. When we take on this discipline, we become, it's not discipline in a rigid way, we become disciples of the truth, of Buddha. We become disciples of our original nature, of our nature that's in rhythm with all life. We become disciples. Not rigid discipline. You know, when you really want to do something, you become a disciple of that. You become a disciple. If we really want to marry ourselves to this natural order where everything is getting born and dying and getting born and dying, we become a disciple. Is that helpful at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anybody else? Yeah, hi.
Touch on this just for a moment, but is it when you're first starting a practice like this, is it normal to feel emotional and is it okay to cry? Is it okay to not in like a setting like this.
Pardon?
Not in a setting necessarily like this, but when you're on your own.
I would say that anything that happens is okay. Anything that happens is okay, and anything may happen. Some people get emotional when they first sit down on their cushion. Some people, it doesn't happen to for 20 years of sitting, and then all of a sudden they totally break down. But you're putting yourself in a vulnerable state through sitting. Even if your concentration is good, you're putting yourself in a vulnerable state. So it takes some. You're taking a risk in a way. And so you're opening yourself to whatever. But you also need to remember that you can always get up, go get a glass of water, go get a drink. You shouldn't force yourself to do this. But it's good when it happens because it means that you're very sensitive to exactly what's going on in your psyche. now, and that's quite wonderful if you have that sensitivity, because usually we try to block that sensitivity through TV and conversation and reading and internet and iPhone, and you know, we try to block that. No iPhones in the Zendo. No text messaging in the Zendo. No text messaging in your head in the Zendo. I'm going to watch. I'm watching. I know about text messaging, you guys. Do we make ourselves vulnerable? And then some awful and wonderful things can happen. But we also can always get up and go jog or go. I mean, we don't need to get overwhelmed by our emotions, so that we're just. We don't want to get overwhelmed by them. But sometimes we have the strength to just let some really strong emotion pass through, and we'll just bawl. That's cool. Just bawl. Cool. What could be better? It's alive. You're alive. A natural order. You're more in touch with the natural order when you just allow yourself to bawl than if you, you know, do your Kundalini yoga. I'm sorry. I'm so bad. Bad teacher. Anybody else? Yeah.
Maybe a lot of you were good children and didn't get in trouble a lot, but I just related to when I was a child and you get punished or you get grounded.
Yeah.
You literally convulsively cry until you just are so tired you can't cry anymore.
That's right. So what's your point? What's the point you're making? That's a good
one. You just let it come in and then you yeah. accept it.
That's right. Yes, that's right. Good point. Yeah, that's right.